From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made this past Thursday on the program when Monroe County Executive Cheryl Donolfo joined us for a full hour. We had the chance to discuss a wide range of issues with her, her new proposed budget, economic development, the appointment of a new leader for Comita, fee waivers in the county clerk's office, and more. And we wanted to allow county Democrats to respond. So today we will address many of those same issues, along with anything our listeners would like to discuss. And you can contact the program a number of ways, at Evan Dawson on Twitter, edawson@wxxi.org if you want to email me. That's the news. That's the email address. Sometimes, you ever get to that moment you don't even know your own phone number? That's sort of me some days. And you can call the program. I do know that number. It's 844-295-TALK. It's toll free, 844-295-8255. My guests in studio are Cindy Kaley, who is the Democratic leader of the Democratic caucus in the Monroe County Legislature. Cindy, welcome back.
Thank you so much.
And Jim Shepherd is here. He's a Democratic legislator. Thank you, Jim. Nice to see you.
Good seeing you, Evan.
Well, Cindy, I know you had a chance to hear some of what the county executive had to say last week on this program. She said that she's hoping the budget gets adopted later this month and that typically it does so without too much fanfare. What do you expect to happen with the budget later this month?
Well, I expect much the same as what's happened in the last 8 years that I've been on the legislature. We are not privy to the budget until the public is privy to the budget. We have one more meeting to go, which is Ways and Means this Thursday. That usually is a committee meeting that takes the longest, where people are asking the most questions. And then come budget night, if we have decided to offer amendments or changes, we'll be allowed to offer them then, and we'll have a vote. The vote is a majority rule.
Is it too compressed the timetable for you? Should you be privy to the budget before the public is?
Well, I would think so. I would think so. We have asked to go back to the old schedule, which used to be the budget was released in October versus November. And that was a change that happened before I joined the legislature. And it was asked again this year, and it was denied.
So you've been on the legislature for 8 years. Jim, you've been on for only, it's been 2 years now.
No, it's been 5 minutes. I got elected this past November.
Okay. So, are you surprised at this process, the budget process, and how compressed it is?
Most definitely. I think in terms of when it's released in late November, after the elections are occurring on a regular basis, you would think that you'd have the opportunity before the elections to review the budget and let the public see what you're running your platform on.
Okay, well, the one thing that I want to play some of what the county executive had to say about the budget. And so, Rob, it's the cut on budget there. This is what Cheryl Donolfo had to say. When I asked her in terms of what to expect, she wanted to point out that not only are taxes not going up, but there won't be sort of any hidden fees. Or in recent years, we've seen chargebacks for things like snow removal, things like that, which I think everyone kind of agrees is just another way to raise taxes and not call it that. So when I had her on the program last year when she was running for office, she understood that complaint and said that they were going to work very hard to make sure that there weren't new fees or chargebacks. Here's what Cheryl Donolfo had to say about the budget.
One of the beautiful, I think, parts of this budget, and I'm proud to say, is that we had no one-shots in this budget. So there are no we didn't sell any county buildings. There's no one-shot surprises in the budget, and there's no increased fees either, nothing below the line. So it was that way of proceeding forward, which was with some fiscal responsibility and certainly a critical eye on making sure that I kept the promises that I made to the people here in this community.
Okay, so I'll start with the leader Kaley on that. Cindy, what do you make of that?
Well, speaking of not raising the taxes, certainly she did not raise the taxes, and your point is taken. Chargebacks are another way to collect fees without raising taxes. We do not have all the formulas for the chargebacks, so there are no new ones that we know of, and we were told no new ones, but we don't know if the rates on those chargebacks are going up or not. That won't happen. We've asked for information on that, but don't have it yet. As far as no one-shots, I don't believe that we have any more buildings that we can sell. In the past, the buildings have been added to balance the budget, and it took a number of years to sell these buildings. But we do have assets that are being transferred in a sale this year, and we don't have the figures, and those are tax liens. Those are assets. Even though they're not physical assets, they are assets. And when you sell a tax lien, a packet of tax liens to a private company, you take funding for that package that's at a greatly reduced price of what the package is worth. So the assumption is you sell a package of tax liens and it's bridge funding to get you over the hump.
Okay. Well, is it premature for you, given the information you have and the information you don't have, to call this a successful budget then the way the county executive was saying? She thinks it's a successful budget. She's stayed to her promises. Is it too early for you to agree to that?
Certainly. Yes.
Okay. Jim, what do you think?
Well, one of the things that we as a caucus have discussed is the fact of what's in the budget relative to daycare and aid to working families. And I think any budget document is a planning document. It shows where your priorities lie. And if your budget doesn't reflect the priorities that are important to the constituency, then you can't say it's a successful budget.
Jim, on that note, on daycare and childcare and funding, certainly when we talk to Leonard Brock, when we talk to a lot of the people involved in the Rochester Monroe Anti-Poverty Initiative, we have seen emphasis on the need to support families, to support a lot of single mothers in our community, childcare help, which we all know can be very high. And the county executive says she is sensitive to that. She also said that she thinks they have done very well with that in this budget. And she added that if you look at other counties, that we are more generous on a county level with that than many others. Is she wrong?
Numerically speaking, she is correct. But I think if you look at where Rochester fits on a national scale in terms of concentration of poverty and where they fit in terms of cities of comparable size, in terms of poverty and the concentration of it, we're failing in that regard. And, you know, and with all the emphasis on doing something about poverty, whether it's the RMAPI or other efforts that are in play right now, it's not going to be successful if we don't start working on it when they're young. You know, one of the things that I talked about when I ran was the fact that a lot of the costs that we spend in terms of jails, education, special ed, are a result of the fact that these young babies are not getting adequate daycare, they're not getting adequate services, and as a result, we're paying a cost in the long term down the road.
So is there a number that you have in mind as a legislator? Do you think that the county could have done better? And do you disagree, Jim, I guess, with the idea that the county executive is saying that her budget does the absolute best that we can right now under the circumstances, dealing with mandates and other things?
First off, it's a $1 billion budget. I do know that Cindy, along with the rest of the caucus, has asked for a $1 million increase based on information that we received from the Children's Agenda. That what was put on the table was $100,000, which I think only added up to about 16 additional children being impacted. And again, when you look at the depth of the problem that we have in this city, which is part of Monroe County, it's inadequate to take such a small step.
Okay. Cindy Kaley?
I agree with everything that Jim has said, and I would bring up the executive talked about the new hires at Maximus. And I think part of her statement on that new hire where they gave names to Maximus, and I think approximately 47 people that were recommended through the county were hired, but part of her following sentence was, but we can't really help them on childcare if they need it. I mean, we can get this far, but we can't do anything more at this point. And I am sincerely hopeful that the people that are hired don't require childcare subsidies to get them over that hump to make it a profitable job. Because we find all too often that someone gets a job, you make too much, you don't qualify, you don't make enough, you can't afford. And this is, we're at a point in Monroe County where we need to go above and beyond. We're not doing enough. And for years, it's been always stated, we meet the maintenance of effort. We need to go beyond that standard.
Before I grab a phone call on the question of the budget and where cuts are coming from, let me ask you then, Leader Kaley, when it comes to what you would propose to do with the budget, you want to go above and beyond with child care, but where's the money going to come from?
Well, that's a hard question to answer, but we've never been brought to the table to try to answer that question. I could cut here, I could cut fleet cars, I could cut accessories for people that work at the county. But if you're not brought to the table in the meantime to work on this, we're just stabbing in the dark.
Okay, let me grab a phone call. This is Mike in Irondequoit first up. Go ahead, Mike.
Hello. Always an interesting subject. For years, we've heard taxes are flat. Maggie Brooks, every year, well, the taxes are flat this year. We didn't raise taxes. And we're hearing again, taxes are flat. Well, you know, taxes may be or may not be flat, but the cost of everything is going up. Well, somewhere those two meet or pass each other. And the only way government can continue is it's not going to raise taxes, but continue to pay out, is to cut service. We're seeing it all. We have seen it for years in maintenance of infrastructure. What else is going to be cut? And I, along with everyone else, have a pretty good idea where the cuts are going to go against the people who have the least ability to resist them. So my thoughts, I'd like to share the thoughts of your panelists.
Thank you, Mike. Go ahead, Cindy.
Well, thank you, Mike. We know that they are only cutting 2.5 jobs in this particular budget, but they are adding 3.5 positions to the communications department. So that in itself is a question. So there are some cuts in employment, but then some raises in employment. So it would be interesting to find out where that's coming from. I think essentially child care is being cut, even though it's not being cut. The statement as to the last budget was that they overspent by $2.5 million. And when questioned in our committees, we asked where did that come from? And that was sort of a softball answer that said, well, it sort of came from forward. We brought it in from the next year, which means if you only add the small amount of money that they talked about adding, that you didn't really increase funding at all. So in a sense, we defined a need of $2.5 million, and we have not met that. So in my mind, that's a cut. We are also not accepting applications at this point for child care funding. So again, to your point, it does affect the people that need the service most.
Jim?
And I think in terms of any budget, if you have to make cuts, and in this particular budget, when you do it, it's usually at social service level. It emphasizes the importance of people actually going to the polls, because a budget is built around getting people that vote for you to be happy. So when you talk about no taxes, a lot of times people are saying, that's great, that's awesome, I get to keep more of my money. And the reality is that the people who would most benefit from the county doing some of these other things that would help people in terms of education, social services, and getting out of poverty, those people don't go to the polls, and so therefore they're ignored. And it's easy to cut in those places because those aren't where your votes are coming from.
All right. Any other questions or comments from listeners? 844-295-TALK as we work our way through county business with Cindy Kaley and Jim Shepard from the Monroe County Legislature. You heard the county executive, Cheryl Donofo, a Republican, last Thursday. The Democrats are here this hour. It's 844-295-TALK, toll-free 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Let's move on to a subject that hung up part of the hour and that our listeners responded to, I think, probably more than any other subject last week, which was the question of fee waivers that came up when Cheryl Donofo was the county clerk. Now, that's a story you might have followed. A quick recap is this. When Cheryl Donofo was the county clerk, and apparently in previous administrations, I believe, there was a policy of allowing some citizens to have fees waived, mostly for passport fees, $25. Don't have to pay it. And the current county clerk, Adam Bello, got into office and took a look and wondered why that was happening and produced a list, I think, of around 700 people who had fees waived and didn't publish the list publicly, wasn't allowed to, but checked in and with the county. And then the State Department weighed in and said that's against the law. It's a violation of the law. You can't do that. You can't pick out citizens to have fees waived. And so what we wanted to do was ascertain a number of things here. First, we just wanted to ask the county executive why those fees were being waived. And interestingly, Jim Shepard's here. Well, one of the reasons we reached out to Legislator Shepard is because you're one of three people that we know of who had fees waived. You, the executive producer of 13 WHAM News, Sean Carroll, and the county executive's husband, Vince Donofo, had fees waived. And what I want to do is listen to what county executive Donofo said about how they chose whose fees were waived, and they asked Jim if this lines up with his experience. So this is her, and I think understanding why fees were waived.
the basis of waiving fees was customer service based. So our staff had the ability to determine whether or not a fee could be waived. For example, if somebody were online for a period of time that maybe was not acceptable, if they had to come into the office multiple times, that might be one of the reasons that a fee would be waived.
All right, Jim, so she is saying that this was, you know, about customer service. If you waited too long, if you maybe had a bad customer service experience, okay, we're going to waive your fee. Did that happen for you?
First off, I want to say that, you know, when this issue first came to light, I didn't recall having a fee waived. Basically, my wife reminded me that we had went and got a passport back in 2012, and she said, well, you ought to go check. And I'm like, why should I go check? I don't recall getting a waiver. So I went the next day and had them check. They went to the computer and said, yes, you did get a waiver.
And back in 2012, when your fee was waived, you were in what position in the
community? I was the chief of the Rochester Police Department.
Okay. Yep.
And so based on that, I started racking my brain. You know, did somebody say to me, oh, we're going to give you a waiver, or, you know, you're getting a waiver because you're the chief of police? That I don't recall either conversation. What I recall is that I was told, you know, I had to pay $110 for the passport. And that's what I paid. And then when this all came to light, I was more than happy to pay the fee because, one, I can't afford to pay the fee. And I think if you're going to give waivers, you should probably extend them to the people who can least afford it.
Okay. So, in other words, your experience doesn't really line up with what you just heard from the county executive.
In terms of it being a customer service process, I can't say that because, like I said, I went to the counter. I didn't go to a room and sit down with anybody of magnitude.
Sure.
It was just a matter of dealing with the people who were at the service counter.
The current county clerk, Adam Bellow, is acknowledging that he cannot release the list of names of people who had fees waived. I would say, I think it's fair to say, and I don't want to speak for him, and I know it's been a little bit sensitive because that list is private. He has hinted that he doesn't really buy the idea it was customer service, that it was more favoritism than anything else. That if we saw the list of names, we would say, well, that doesn't look like county service. That looks like favoritism. But the clerk is not releasing the names, and he's complying with what he has been told he has to do by law. Let's now turn to a separate issue here. Now, we know the county executive's husband, Vince DiNolfo, had a fee waived, and that's been sort of well documented. But I wanted to also ask her, if he was the only one in her family. In other words, if this was favoritism, is it possible that the county executive, who was the county clerk at the time, was waiving fees for herself or her family? And her answer is what kind of hung up some of the audience, who said it didn't feel like all that direct an answer. Let's listen to that exchange. Anyone else in your family who had fees waived?
Well, we are looking at that and assessing that situation. And if there were fees that were waived, then they will be paid back, given the state ruling.
How is that happening? You know, how long is the process of trying to figure out if your own family members had fees waived, et cetera?
Well, I appreciate that question. What we're hearing out in the community is that notifications that were being sent by the current county clerk. We're coming in stages, and we're just assessing that as we go forward. So that is the best that I can give you right now. And certainly for anybody who may have received a letter or may still receive a letter, that's an individual decision for each individual to decide whether they will be responding or how they will respond to a letter should they receive one.
All right, that may be confusing, and so let me try to sum up as best I can there what she's saying. What she's saying is, and what she also clarified a little bit later in the interview is, even though she was the county clerk, she wasn't standing at the counter deciding who would get a waiver or not. Her staff had been given a set of guidelines. They were making some of those decisions. So if someone had a fee waived, Ms. DiNolfo might not have known about it directly. She's indicating that. On the subject of whether she or her family had fees waived, she should know by now. Now, I didn't know this at the time during the interview, but we checked in with the county clerk's office afterwards, because what Ms. DiNolfo is saying there is, well, they may not know it right now, that there are several batches of letters that went out from the clerk's office identifying people who had fees waived improperly and letting them know, and then if you want to repay it, you can. And she's indicating, well, you know, maybe we don't know yet. She should know by now, to be blunt about it, because the county clerk said, no, there were two batches of letters and the last one went out November 4th. So we're talking a month ago. So if she or her family had fees waived improperly, they would know by now. And we didn't get a direct answer from her on that. I certainly appreciate her being here answering questions, but we still don't know that. And maybe you think this is over. Cindy Cayley, is this issue over for you? Is
that? Well, I don't feel that it's over because I don't understand what she means by good customer service. She mentioned that a number of times. And
but she just explained. She said, you know, waiting in line, you know, multiple trips, that kind of a thing.
That's true. But we have customers across the board in Monroe County that come to us for services of different natures. So quite arguably, if I had to wait in line a long time at the DMV, I could argue that my fee should be waived because it took too long for them to do the business that I needed to be done. And on the other side of the aisle, the other side of the paper would be those people that come to us and have to fill out form after form and submit affidavit after affidavit for service. And it's the customer service that seems to be written in the policy, which we don't have, through the county clerk's office in the past, has been subjective. It works one way, but it doesn't work the other way. So the people that need assistance aren't necessarily getting the same level of customer service. So good customer service should be first and foremost universal and not rewarded, not bad customer service rewarded with a monetary break.
Okay. Jim Shepherd, is this issue settled for you?
I think the simplest thing would be, and it's been my personal experience and my observation, is that in circumstances as this, the best thing to do is to deal with it immediately. You know, one of the simple things that she could have done is just walk across that 100 feet mm-hmm. from her office to the county clerk's office, ask them the same question, you know, am I on that list? Or is my family on that list? Pay it off and be done with it. And I think a lot of times when we're put in those situations where it can be embarrassing, we tend to put it off. And the simplest thing to do is deal with it, and now it's in the rearview mirror.
If she and her family, beyond just her husband, who we know about, Jim, if they had fees waived, would you be bothered by that?
I would be, based on the fact that the number of people that have had them waived did not indicate that it was across the board and that it was something that it was done for everybody and regardless of their status. I think that would say that there's a problem. And I think that based on what I've heard so far, whether it's through here or in different media venues, it appears that it was based on status as opposed to customer service.
Okay, Cindy Cayley, if Cheryl Donolfo or other family members of hers are on that list, would you be bothered by that?
Yes, I would be bothered by it because I do agree with Jim. And I agree in the instance of, say, take the notaries that may have had fees waived or not fees waived. It's an ethical point. And it also leads into a different area where while she was county clerk, the forms for the SAFE Act, the opt-out forms, were left in a drawer. That's a different level of customer service. There were no fees involved, certainly. But she gave deference in her own statements to not wanting to overwhelm a judge to handle those forms that were coming in. And I believe there's 20,000 plus, but yet waive monetary fees that were due the state. Yes.
Let me grab another phone call, and Sam in Rochester wants to join the conversation. Go ahead, Sam.
Yes. Thank you, Evan, for taking the call.
Sure.
I am originally from Donaldsonville, Georgia, and when I ETS, I was in the Army during the Vietnam era, and when I ETS out of the Army and had to go back to my hometown and re-register and get my driver's license, they gave me a lifetime driver's license free. And then when I came to Rochester, they let me keep my license from Georgia. But then when I got to Rochester, I had to pay for my license. And since they were doing the waiver for those people on the different passports and different things, why is it that they can't do that for veterans so that when they get out of the Army, even now, that they would give them their driver's license free for a lifetime? And just to add to that, I know you guys are getting on Cheryl Donolfo for what she did about the waiver and all that, but I would have loved to have seen you guys put Maggie Brooks under the light when her husband and her administration and herself were involved in these things. I don't know why y'all didn't do that doing Cheryl Donolfo.
Right, now, Sam, can I defend the program just a little bit here? I took over the program in January 2014. Then County Executive Brooks came on the program in February of 2014. And again, I always thank elected leaders, no matter their background, no matter their party, when they give us time. She came on for the full hour. That was the only hour she ever came on for. If you can go back and find that conversation for the hour. And I think what we demonstrated was we were very firm and direct with asking questions that I think were relevant at the time about LDCs. I asked her directly, why did your husband get a job with security for the Monroe County Water Authority? There's plenty of retired police officers that could probably do the job. Jim Shepard might be able to attest to that. I asked her if it was time for elected leaders to stop hiring family members for jobs connected to government, even if they're qualified, because maybe the public should assume that there's no conflict of interest. We covered a lot of ground on that day.
But one thing you didn't ask her was why the other guy went to prison and her husband didn't go to prison.
Well,
he did the same thing. Why didn't he go? He should have went to prison with him. But so, I want to stay with that. I hear what you're saying. I'll listen to that off
the
air,
but
I want to know about that driver's license.
You got
for
it.
Veterans for free.
You got it. Sam, thanks for the call. To close the loop on that question, after then-County Executive Brooks came on the program in February of 2014, she did not come back. She was invited many times for solo interviews, for one-on-one conversations, and that was it. She came back one time as part of the Rochester Monroe Anti-Poverty Initiative as part of a panel, but she did not come back in her capacity as county executive to address county business after that hour. And that happens sometimes. Sometimes you have interviews. I strive to be fair, but it doesn't matter if it's Cindy Kaley or Lovely Warren or Maggie Brooks or Jim Shepard or whoever it is. We're going to ask questions I think are direct and relevant. And if they choose not to come back, there's not a whole lot I can do about that. We can keep asking. So I didn't have the chance, Sam, to follow up with then-County Executive Brooks about that because she did not come back on the program. And that's her choice, and we have to respect that. Now, as to your question, Cindy Kaley, you want to address that?
Sam, your question is reasonable, but I think it more has to do with licensing, driver's licensing reciprocity between states. And that would be a state issue. We can certainly look into it. I think it's reasonable to look into it. And if you want to give information offline to the station, we can ask those questions and see if that's something that can happen or not. But I believe that that kind of waiver would have to be state-driven.
Okay. Thanks for the phone call, Sam. It's 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Let's get our only break of the hour in. We're going to come back and talk about some of the other county business in front of us. There is a new leader for Comita. We're going to talk about that process and a lot more with Cindy Kaley and Jim Shepard, who are Democrats from the Monroe County Legislature. Coming up in our second hour, the Dakota Access Pipeline. There have been protesters from around the country who have gone to show solidarity with Native Americans and their rights in that region. Some of the protesters and demonstrators have been from Rochester and our region, and we're going to meet some of them. Some are there now, some are recently returned, and they're going to tell us about what they have achieved, but what they hope to achieve going forward. That's next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. When it comes to Comita, Comita had a sort of a big year in the news. Usually Comita is kind of under the radar. You don't hear a whole lot. It's the Industrial Development Agency for Monroe County, and they're making decisions on projects, economic projects and development. And of course, you probably remember last winter into the spring, there was that issue with Comita being politicized, and we had board members resign. We had a national search for a new leader for Comita, in which Monroe County was searching for someone qualified in economic development who could lead this body and do it in a way that I think restored some public confidence. And after a national search, the county executive chose Jeff Adair. Now, Jeff Adair was in the Monroe County Legislature for 12 years as a Republican. President of the legislature, Cindy, he was, right?
Yes, he was.
Okay, and I know you worked alongside him at least a number of those years, right?
In fact, the entire 8 years that he was there.
Yeah, because he just recently is out of office from term limits. But he is he has worked in the business sector and obviously very close to Republican leadership, and he got the job. So I want you to listen to the exchange that I had with Cheryl DeNolfo about whether Jeff Adair was the right choice after a national search for a job of this nature.
Jeff really rose to the top of the applicant pool. There's no question about it. He brought all of the necessary ingredients, relationships with people in this community, extensive business experience, and I think he has certainly shown his worth by what he has done in the few months that he has been on board as our Chief Economic Development Director. And again, his expertise in the business field.
Do you understand why some listeners may think, you know, you had a national search, and the issue with Kamita was it politicized? You had people resigning from the board, and the person you appointed was a political ally. Now, Jeff may be very qualified, but couldn't there have been somebody who is also qualified who wasn't also a political ally that might make people feel like they're a little more detached, it's a little less insidery?
Well, I can assure you that the appointment of Jeff Adair was not because he was a political ally. I can tell you that each appointment that I make is based on qualifications. And Jeff's qualifications really rose far above others that we looked at in conjunction with the Economic Development Director.
Okay, that's County Executive Cheryl Donofo defending the selection of Jeff Adair to lead Kamita. Cindy Cayley, what do you make of that?
Well, it's the answer that I would expect, and it took quite a long time to find a director for economic development, and she is right. Jeff has a length and breadth of experience in the business community, but I can't speak to that work because I was not part of it. But as a county legislator and the president of the legislature, where I have known him for 8 years, he was very good at it, and he was very, I would say, hard. And he also...
Hard why?
Hard. He was... I once said the Republicans were all hard nuts to crack when we were trying to balance something.
Did he reach out and did he work well with Democrats?
Well, I think he did work, but we always work together in a very slim margin. This is not... We get along, but we don't work across the aisle.
Did you feel he respected you?
Yes, for the most part.
Okay.
However, where I take exception to Jeff and his record is that prior to the Donofo administration, in the Brooks administration, his service and as a legislator and the president, he fully supported the creations of the LDCs.
Okay. Do you accept her statement that this was a nationwide search? And that he simply, even though as a political ally, it was just coincidentally, he was the most qualified candidate after a nationwide search.
I have to accept it. She came up with places and people that came from other areas. But did he just rise to the surface or was he already at the surface? I disagree with them saying that they did a search and there was Jeff.
You're saying you think they reached out to him for that job?
Oh, I can't say that. What okay. I'm saying is I don't know that he was that far from their thoughts in filling the position.
Okay, and I'll get Jim's take on this in just a minute, but just to follow that, Cindy, let's say you're a county executive and you're filling a very important position, and this is someone that you know well. Yeah, they're a political ally, but you trust them, you know them well, you think they'll do the job well. Is there something wrong with making that kind of selection?
For most part, no. But given the history of the administration past and this one, I think that they could have chosen someone that was not so closely related to the prior administration. And they also created a second position below him and filled that with someone that actually had IDA experience from Chautauqua County. So we have two people now in positions where previously to this we had one.
Okay. Jim Shepherd, what do you think?
I think the key word here is optics. In terms of how it looks. This was a wonderful opportunity for Cheryl Donofo to come in and do something different. You know, there was a previous issues with the administration relative to the LDCs, other issues relative to ethics and corruption. And so this was an opportunity for her to come in, choose somebody that was qualified and not attached to any of the past issues. By bringing somebody who has history, it's tainted a little bit, whether he's an excellent candidate or not. And to say you did a nationwide search, if you're not going to choose somebody from outside of the area, you might have just said you did an extensive search and a number of people rose to the top and you chose this person. But when you throw out there you're going to do a nationwide search, the expectation is that you're going to choose someone who's not already aligned with your administration.
I asked her about that nationwide search. She said there were about a dozen candidates. She can't release the list of names, but they had candidates from the West Coast, from the East Coast, and Jeff just happened to be the guy, that this was a clear choice for her. So as we turn then, to another nationwide. There were two nationwide searches in Monroe County this year. One produced Jeff Adair, a local political ally for the leadership. And again, not saying he's not qualified for the job, but he's local. And the other nationwide search was for the director of the Office of Public Integrity, which Cheryl Donolfo campaigned on. She said, we need that office, that it needs to be independent, that she wants to create the most transparent and ethical local government in the country. And so she conducted a national search for the director of that office and also chose someone from essentially just down the hall. She chose David Moore, who is not only a former Rochester police chief, but has worked for the administration. And so this was another case where you had a national search and you choose someone very close to you. Now, again, she said David Moore is a fabulous guy, and she trusts him, and she trusts him to be independent. Jim Shepherd, this is an issue that was very high on your radar screen all year long. Are you satisfied with what you saw there?
Having worked for David and with David for a number of years, I know him to be an outstanding individual. And I think that within our caucus, that was something that we all agreed on, is that in terms of who he is and what his experience is, he's more than qualified for that position. But again, it comes down to the optics of it relative to doing a nationwide search, following the past administration and some of the issues that have come to light, that it would be a perfect opportunity to show that, yes, you know what, it's very important to you that you have a Office of Public Integrity and that you have a director of the Office of Public Integrity who is not attached to the prior administration.
Okay, Cindy Kaley?
I've known Chief Moore probably longer than Jeff Adair because I knew him in a neighborhood status, and I have a great respect for him. And I agree with what Jim is saying. If you're going to have a nationwide search, the expectation is it's not going to be right at home. But if you're going to choose someone at home that is applicable to the position and is in well regard, then do it and do it swiftly. Don't take so long to make it happen. And I think that this announcement basically came after she was questioned from the press as to who the director was going to be, and then the announcement came out. I don't think that they did Chief Moore any favors by dragging their feet.
So let me ask both of you. I'll start with you, Jim, because I think this is the central question here. The director of the Office of Public Integrity has to be able to make decisions, to investigate, to operate in a way that doesn't feel pressured by the administration or other political operatives. The public has to be able to trust that this is a true ethics office. You like David Moore. You know David Moore. Are you worried that he will not be able to operate in that way?
I can't say that I'm worried in terms of his ethics. Like I said, I've worked for him. I know him, and I think that he'll do the job to the best of his abilities. Again, I think in terms of the optics, in terms of the people out there in the Monroe County community, the constituents who've had to go through the past 12 years of administration that had ethical problems, that to choose someone who is not attached to that would be what the people would want.
Do you think David Moore would investigate and would pursue whatever he needed to pursue if he uncovered or something was brought to his attention in this administration that was unethical?
I think that's yet to be told. I think that the opportunity is going to come. We're going to put things in his lap to say, look into this. We're even going to go backwards talking about Comedia and some of the issues that they've had there, and then we'll see what happens. I think that, like I've said all along, I have faith in him. I know he's an ethical man. I know he's more than experienced, and I don't think there's a candidate in the country that you could say what's better than him. But other than the optics, in that sense, I think she could have done better.
Okay, and I know what you're saying, but listeners may think, well, who cares about optics? It's the substance of it, and if you're saying he's going to be great, he's going to be great. No?
Yet to be seen.
Okay, Cindy?
I think that he's going to rise above the occasion, and this is a different situation from Monroe County. Up until this point, we've had a whistleblower hotline, and that's it. And that hotline was responded to by lawyers that were under the Brooks administration. We were not even allowed to find out how many calls were made. So this is a wildly exciting step forward in terms of accountability. And I believe that Chief Moore is capable of doing it. And I also believe that he wants to be held accountable. So going forward, I think that we will see what we need to see from the office. I don't think that there's anything that you can really bury when you're in a separate office. He will be in a separate building. Mm-hmm. And I'm encouraging people that if they have issues, that they get the ball rolling and let him do the job that he's been hired to do.
Okay, Jim?
And I keep saying that word optics. And the reason I throw that out there is because a lot of times information comes to your Office of Public Integrity from employees that are within the administration, mm-hmm. lower down on the food chain. And they want to feel comfortable being able to go to someone and saying, these are some of the things I see, and I want to remain anonymous, and I don't want to be chastised for coming forward. And so that's where that faith comes in, and that's where the optics really play in for those people to feel comfortable going forward to say, here's some things that need to be looked into.
Okay, that's an important point, because you're not saying you don't think David Moore would do an ethical job, but you're saying certain things may not even get to him if people feel like, well, you know, this is this administration's person. I don't know if I can go to it. So, you know, it's not a matter of David Moore not doing the job. It's a matter of making sure everyone who would need to trust him would feel comfortable trusting him. Is that right?
And that's my point. Like I said, I've worked in that Office of Public Integrity for the city. And yeah. I knew that there were city employees who felt comfortable coming in and saying things. And there were city employees who were fearful that, hey, you might go to the mayor at the time, which was Duffy, and say that I came forward. So you have to take that in consideration when you make those choices.
Okay. Let me grab a phone call. John in Rochester next up. Go ahead, John.
Hey, Evan. Yeah. Tom DiNapoli, last year, I think it was, classified Monroe County as one of the financially stressed counties in the state. And my question is, the only solution I can see is to increase taxes. And that's not a good thing for the taxpayers. Have you, as legislators, considered financial control boards? It was very successful in Erie County. And if you look at Erie County's ultimate result of a financial control board, county taxes are much less than they are here in Monroe County, and it benefited the taxpayers greatly. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, thank you, John. Go ahead, Cindy Cayley.
Thank you, John. You know, really, it's a matter of whether or not the Republican administration would even consider that, and I don't think that that's ever been on the table or ever considered. In the past, we've actually looked at lowering the size of the legislature to help with the budget constraints. And that was also nixed from the very beginning. I'll be honest with you, the use of a control board is something that Jim has been using the word optics, has an optic to it that people are not comfortable with, but it has not been brought up rather as a positive move forward.
Sure. And by the way, on the subject of number of legislators, there's 29.
There are 29 of us, yes. We
is that
asked,
too many?
Well, it depends on who you talk to.
I'm talking to you.
No, it could be considered too many because many counties are actually going lower. We represent roughly 24,000 to 26,000 people, depending. And I think we were asking could it go down to 17 or 19.
But that's never
a reduction.
That has never been met with much excitement.
No, in fact, one person actually said, "Well, I couldn't walk that many houses." So
okay, Jim, do you want to respond at all to John's comments about a control board?
I'm aware of what happened in Erie County. I think it happened like 10 years ago, based on some of the issues that they have there. One of the things I would want to point out is the fact that when we talk about Monroe County and its budget, a lot of times it's highlighted that a lot of it is based on mandates. And looking at the ranking of Monroe County as being so low relative to their management of their finances, and all the counties in the state have the same mandates, that gives you some indication that what we have is a problem here relative to how we handle our funds.
Okay, let me get a couple more listener comments. Gary writes to the program and wants to know, he says, there is wealth in the county and some poverty in the city. Would your guests comment on government consolidation as a solution? And I don't know, I mean, consolidation means a lot of different things, Cindy,
yeah,
but speaking generally, what do you think?
Well, there are a number, and both sides of the aisle will speak to this. There are a number of consolidations within Monroe County that do save local governments and the county and the city funds through intergovernmental agreements. The school districts have talked about whether or not you would have a district school district versus a one county district versus
right.
multiples. That's always been voted down. We have an island in the center of the county that we haven't had the favor or the agreement on the outside areas to go to a full county type government. So it hasn't been brought up in conversation.
Okay. Jim, anything to add there?
And I know this is something that had a negative connotation relative to metro governments. Mm. I think that if you look at some of the issues that the city faces relative to poverty and education, a metro concept would help alleviate some of those issues. You know, instead of having a school district where 99% of the children are in poverty, you could diffuse that a little bit by determining that schools would only have a level of 40% in terms of poverty. Same thing with the taxes. You know, you can have 13 chiefs of police. You can have, you know, so many.
What you're saying, Jim, requires tremendous political courage. What you just said with 40% is what happened in Wake County, North Carolina in the 70s and 80s. Yeah. And it has been, for the most part, nothing's perfect, very successful. Yeah. And it also takes tremendous political courage.
And, I'm glad you brought that up because I think it's very key that, you know, instead of always going along just to get along, that we really have to take the needs of our constituents and put those first, not our personal ambitions, not the things that will make the rest of the party happy or the people across the aisle. But
or really, guarantee your reelection.
But just basically look at what the citizens need and make those things happen. And, you know, I don't want to be the advocate of consolidations.
No, I understand.
But
I understand
the point is,
you're open to ideas.
Yes.
Yes?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Let me grab one more listener comment on Twitter. Tom writes to the program and says, Evan, nothing says public integrity more than hiring a person, David Moore, that served on the board of one or more local LDCs. Okay. So, and Tom, by the way, has been very concerned, I think, about some of the ethics issues related to LDCs and others in various programs. So, Tom, thank you for that. Cheryl Donolfo addressed that briefly, and she did say on this program last Thursday that a year ago she had some doubters that the county could wind down LDCs pretty quickly. She has talked about doing that with three different LDCs. She thinks it's been one of the big achievements of her first year in office. Cindy Kaley, what do you think?
Well, I'd respond to that. I think what's been eliminated by the county absorbing it is the debt has been transferred that was created by the LDCs to the county. The LDCs themselves actually still exist. That takes a different action for those to be dissolved, and whether or not they're actually dissolved remains to be seen, but they are not dissolved. We have absorbed the debt, and we will recoup, or we will see a savings of roughly $3 million the first year, and we haven't been given any figures on what the savings might be going forward, but always to remind people that what we have lost over the subsequent 4 or 5 years is much greater than the $3 million that we'll have in savings this coming year.
Well, what if we lost? County Executive Brooks said LDCs were created to save taxpayers' money.
Well, they were created to save taxpayers' money. They were also the one of the initial ones was we were required to vote on that at the 11th hour because they needed to have that approved so that they could go out and get funding. But that didn't happen. What they had written down as their plan did not happen in the timeline. So when monies were purchased, bonded, the rates were not the same. And currently, the government rates are much more affable, and we're able to create a savings. But we've already lost a great deal. And on the other side of that, what we were paying for with LDCs were the people that were doing the management. The people that were doing the work were actually county employees. Now we've brought all the work back home in terms of management, and the same people are doing the work.
Okay. Jim, some final thoughts on the LDCs then? Go ahead.
I think when you look at what the LDCs cost, and I think one of the estimates is about $39 million that it costs the taxpayers of Monroe County relative to the LDCs, I think the administration should be applauded in making the moves that they have to eliminate them and dissolve them. Obviously, we have a long ways to go before we get to where we need to be, but I think that we are moving down the right path to rectify that situation.
Okay. Well, Cindy, about 30 seconds. Any final thoughts you want to add for our listeners on things that are on Democrats' priority list before you go? Go ahead.
Well, I just want to, again, state that we are happy that the LDCs are on their way out the door, because that's what the Democrats asked for the entire time. I do have a couple final thoughts. We still need to increase the communications level across county lines, across party lines. We as legislators still have to foil for any information we want. So
wow.
Why is that? I can hear the tune coming on.
That's okay. That's okay. You got 20 seconds. Tell me more.
And our director, we wanted the Comita Group to be their own boss. We wanted them to hire and fire their own director, and they were not comfortable with doing that.
Disappointed in that.
I am.
Okay, well,
I think it would have been a better process.
Well, Cindy Cayley is the leader of the Democratic Caucus for the Monroe County Legislature. Always nice to see you. Thank you for being here,
Cindy.
Thank you. And Jim Shepherd, a Monroe County Legislator. Thank you, Jim. Thanks for all the phone calls and interactions. Short break and much more connections next.